You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Hello there, it's Jameela Jamil. Take a deep breath. Let your breath out slowly to the count of six. One, two, three, four, five, six. Do you feel better? Well, on my podcast, I Weigh, this month we'll be exploring ways to tackle mental health and feel better with guests like Simon Sinek from The Optimism Company, therapist Vienna Farren, comedian Neil Brennan, and many more. Listen to I Weigh wherever you get your podcasts.
TV I Say with Ashley Ray. Another episode, another episode of TV I Say with Ashley Ray. Another episode of TV I Say.
Hello and welcome to another episode of TV I Say with Ashley Ray. We're back with episode 11. Another episode. I'm so excited for today's episode. We have Nikki Mayard on the show. Nikki Mayard from Laser Wolf, amazing writer, so funny. We get into Laser Wolf, which is one of my favorite shows for all the reasons you'll hear about in the interview. It's so, so good. Walked away with an even deeper love of that show. So that'll be coming up. Up first, though, you know, it's the watch list. You know, we start with all of the TV that I watched over the last week. If you subscribe to the newsletter, which you can on Substack at ashleyray.substack.com, you can read all of these details throughout the week. If you are like me and you want to watch TV at an unhealthy rate and you're like, it's Tuesday, what do I watch? Subscribe to the newsletter and you can watch along with me. But if you are someone who watches TV at a healthy pace, this is your weekly update, things you might want to check out over the weekend while you relax, you well-adjusted person I'm jealous of. So this is the watch list. Up first is Evil Lives Here. That is on Discovery Plus. It's an investigation discovery show, true crime, premiered in 2016. It's not a new show by any means, but I am just checking out Discovery Plus now. I got a sign up. By the way, if you have Verizon, you can get a free sign up for like 6 months through your Verizon account. I'm not plugging that. I just found that out and it's helpful. But I started watching all these old shows that are on there, and I started with Evil Lives Here. It's about people who lived with murderers before they knew they were murderers, kind of. But it's like ex-wives who are like, yeah, I was married to this guy for 10 years, and then one day the cops were just like, he murdered four women, and they're like, what? I had no idea I lived with him. But then they talk about what it was like living with him, and you're like, oh, I think maybe you had some ideas, but it's a wild show to watch. I love it. My mom, I told her about it and she was like, Ashley, I have been watching Evil Lives Here since it first came out. Investigation, discovery, true crime. This is my scene. This is what I do. So that's the Discovery Plus app so far. It's a lot of shows that I'm like, oh yeah, whenever I go back home, this is what my mom just has on TV all the time. But hey, they're good shows. I mean, if you're looking for comfort TV, they got all the cooking shows, they got all that stuff, the I'ma Fix My Life, which is exactly what I like to veg out to. So I've been watching a lot of Discovery Plus since we had a coup. That's how I comfort myself, I guess, is watching Evil Lives Here. There's some crazy stories on there. There's a guy who joins a cult, and then it's a cult I had never even heard of. He like ends up killing four people. They also shoot it really cool because they don't reveal what the person did until the end. So you're kind of like, oh my gosh, what is this horrible person going to do? But it's also interesting because it focuses more on the survivors who were left behind and impacted by the people's actions more so than these evil people. So I think it's a really great way to understand sort of the process of how we work through our trauma, the guilt that we hold, and how we blame ourselves for things. But I mean, there's one woman on there and she straight up was married to this guy and he was like, hey, yo, I killed people. And she was like, you're so funny. And then years that he was like, it happened again. And she was like, oh, wait, you were for real? I recommend it if you are into true crime. Moving on the watch list with more Discovery Plus content, I'm just going to dig into all the 90 Day Fiancé. I mean, it is basically in my DNA. It's like I have a blood oath to constantly talk about 90 Day Fiancé. I watch so much of it all the time. I write about it constantly. So if you are sick of my 90 Day opinions, I'm sorry, but I have so much to say still. I'm going to start with 90 Day Diaries, which I tweeted a little bit about. I wrote about it in the newsletter last week because these were the shows when I was like, oh my God, Discovery Plus is so worth it. And I'm so happy that this exists. 90 Day Diaries and 90 Day Bears All. Those are the two for me that was like, yes, this is the type of premium content I'm willing to pay $5 a month for. It's very different from the show. It's cool that it's in an app because it gets so weird and X-rated. It's cool. I'm into it. And also, Shawn Robinson is like the best host in the world, and she hosts 90 Day Bears All. So to me, it's like, okay, this is worth it. But I'm addicted to 90 Day Fiancé. So, you know, that's me. If you are a healthy person, I don't know. But 90 Day Diaries is cool. It's kind of each person, couples who have been on the show, people who've been on the show, they film it themselves. They just talk into their cell phones and they're like, here's what I've been going through. Here's an update on my life. And it's kind of like the 90 Day Self-Quarantined that they did, but that was weird and kind of gross. And 90 Day Diaries is a little bit better because it's more structured. And they also bring back people that you actually care about. And by that, I mean Danielle and Mohammed, of course. Danielle and Mohammed, like they know that's what the people want to see. And they bring back Danielle and Mohammed. And it's actually very well done. It's not exploitive feeling like Happily Ever After or What Now? And when they had Danielle like come back for that, it feels a little bit better. So I liked it. I like 90 Day Diaries. Also, Courtney is back. You remember Courtney and Antonio? And Courtney, the last time we saw her was in self-quarantine where she got stuck with her sugar daddy. She was literally like, I just came to visit for 2 weeks. And then they were like, you can't fly. And I didn't want to get my parents sick because I live with my parents. So I just stayed here. And we hate each other and we fight like every 20 minutes, but we're making it work. That was a very good Courtney impression, by the way. If you don't watch 90 Day Fiancé, you don't know that that was a very good Courtney impression, but I nailed it. But she's back with that same sugar daddy. She basically stayed there. She ended up getting stuck and you finally see her go back home and just be like, I'm reclaiming my life. So shout out to Courtney, one of my favorites from 90 Day. 90 Day Bears All. That's what's up next. What I watched, all the episodes that are out. 90 Day Bears All comes out every Sunday. So after the new episode of 90 Day on TLC, you can go watch this. And it's kind of like a tell-all after show clip show. Shawn Robinson extravaganza. It's like so much better than a clip show or an after show. It's such a good combination of what you should do with a streaming show. They bring in other couples to comment on current couples who are on the show, you know, so you get to see David and Annie, some of the classics. And there's just no rules. It's like, oh my gosh, they did not have to share that with us. It gets so personal and uncomfortable. But it's so good to watch. In the last episode, there's this moment with Tariq and his brother, and you know, they don't talk. And they finally force each other to have this conversation. And there's just the most emotional reveal I've ever seen on reality TV. And you know, it is so real. And one of them is so, I'm not going to spoil it. One of them is so hurt. And you just see the devastation right there. And Shawn is just like, I got to fix this. You know, Shawn really wants to fix this relationship. And she cares about these two. But at the same time, she is leaking information because it is amazing television. God, she's a genius. Moving on to 90 Day Fiancé, not moving far along at all. Still writing about it on Vulture if you're following the recaps. I am loving this season. There's just some really surprising villains and heroes. Like, surprise, surprise, I'm absolutely in love with Yovie and Yara. They are my favorite people in the world. I'm really rooting for those two. I thought they were just going to be the boring couple that was clearly there for Instagram followers and to get some clout. If you remember, what's that couple? Like, Blake, it was the black guy and the girl from Sweden or whatever. They were just so boring. And so I kind of thought Yovie and Yara would be like that, but I adore these two. First of all, Yara is a queen. The way she is just like, I do not do things I don't like to do. And she just is like, yeah, Yovie, everything in your house is broken ugly. You need to grow up and stop wearing your outside shoes in the house. Yeah, she's just trying to upgrade this guy who is absolutely my type. A friend of mine and I were talking about it, and he was like, Ashley, you absolutely would date this boat shoe wearing New Orleans asshole. And I was like, yes, you are absolutely right. I can get with a guy who wears Sperry's. I don't know why I shared that. I don't know. But yeah, so Yovi and Yara, those two. If it doesn't work out, though, Yovi. I love New Orleans. I love it so much. Hit me up. You could be on a boat. I don't care. I love long distance relationships. That's great. Oh, moving on. Shameless. Shameless. It's back from clip episodes. They did 2 weeks of clip episodes for the holidays. I didn't really watch them. I mean, I put them on and did some other work because I hate clip shows and, you know, I've seen it. They had some new stuff in there, but it was like all cutesy stuff, you know, for the mega fans. But they're back this week with a new episode. And hey, they're trying to really do this ensemble sitcom spin in the final season. You know, they don't have Fiona. It's what they got to do. I kind of like it, but it's also weird because they're finally like, let's really kind of take on themes like racism and all of this head on. And it just falls so flat because these things have never really mattered in the world of the show in a real way before. And they're trying to take on like the police issue. And it sets a weird tone. But hey, as I've previously said on the pod, Lip is still hot. So, hey, I'm going to watch that show until it's in the grave. Next up, Love After Lockup. I got back into that. I gave up on it. I was like, I'm going to stop watching this show. And then, of course, over break, I ran out of TV to watch. So I desperately turned back to Love After Lockup. Caught up on the last 3 episodes. You know, they are still stretching plot. I feel like since the 3 episodes I watched, maybe 2 hours of events have happened. It's literally just like, oh man, he's still trying to find the girl that ran away and he owes money on her bail and stuff. It is, I don't know, but it's just still, for me, it's like a version of reality TV that's really interesting. I had tweeted something. They announced a new Netflix show, The Bling Dynasty or The Bling Empire. But they announced a new Netflix show about just really rich people. And I tweeted something like, nobody wants to watch a reality show about rich people anymore. There was an article that came out like 3 years ago, actually, about how that wave of reality TV is dying. The wave of rich people, of housewives, of the Kardashians. And we see that now with the Kardashians ending. We see that with more sort of backlash, even against online Instagram influencers who flaunt their wealth. It's just not what people want anymore. And at the same time, you see shows like 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup, Unexpected, just growing and growing. You see more people interested in more sort of like bare bones, semi-documentary style reality TV. Versus this sort of false reality, this created reality. Anyway, I'm going to be writing about that for a thing. You'll hear about it. But that's why I watched this trash. Anyway, that was my long explanation for explaining why I watched Love After Lockup, even though it's not a great reality show. So if you're watching it, isn't Michael still disgusting? Great. Moving on, my favorite show that I watched over the last week, my absolute favorite, Veneno. Veneno on HBO Max. Oh my God. I fell in love with this show. I watched it all in a day. I just immediately clicked with it. And it was on a bunch of people's best of the year list last year. It came out in November in America. And I wish if I had watched it earlier, it would have been on my list too. But I know over at Vulture, they had it on the list. Absolutely good call because it was one of the best shows that I watched. It is so moving. It's hilarious. Amazing performances, the way the narrative is structured. I can't believe more people aren't talking about it. And, you know, I take that as a personal failure. That's on me. I should have watched it earlier. I should have told people about it earlier. And I'm making it up to the world now. You gotta fucking watch Veneno. It's on HBO Max. Just go watch it. Just go do it. Watch it with subtitles. Watch it with dubs. It doesn't matter. Whichever version you need to do, watch it because it's so good. I'm not even going to tell you what it's about. Just go watch it. It's one of the best shows I've ever seen. I'll tell you what it's about. It's about this just, you know what? No, I'm not going to tell you what it's about. It's about Veneno. I don't even know where to start. I'm going to watch it again. It's one of those things where I'm just like, I need to be immersed in this story again because it's 10 different stories in one story. It's a world. Just go watch that show. Okay, moving on. Oh my God, watch Veneno. Best Leftovers Ever. That's the next show on Netflix. I got into Best Leftovers Ever. I talk a lot on the show about the Great Pottery Throwdown and the Flower Fight and other reality shows that I like. And Best Leftovers Ever is kind of like that. I really liked that Netflix cooking show, Cooking with Cannabis. That one to me is one of the best weed cooking shows ever made. Best Leftovers Ever is kind of a similar tone, but there aren't any guests. It's just your standard panel of judges. And it's interesting because I actually think having guests would kind of put some really good energy into the show. At times it feels a bit stagnant, which I think is the biggest problem for me. Like once you kind of accept, okay, they're just recooking leftovers in a different way, it's an interesting concept and it's cool to see the end product. But then you already know how each judge is going to respond to what they're eating because you get used to what they like. So there's no real surprise in terms of who's going to win. But I still like the reveal of, oh my gosh, how did you use fried chicken for that? So yeah, that's cool. Next up, Laser Wolf. Like I said, we have Nicki Mayard on the show today. So I was rewatching Laser Wolf to get ready for the interview. The second season just ended this past weekend. So you can go watch all of it. It's all going to be on HBO Max soon, but it's also on Adult Swim now and in the Hulu app. It's just so good. It has a reputation as like the Adult Swim stoner comedy that like doesn't try to make sense, but the show makes so much sense. And we'll get to it in the interview. But it's on the watch list, so you should watch it too. And finally, I watched Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor premiered. I watched the first two episodes. This show, I talked about the comedians last week and how that show was funny, but just bad timing world culture wise. And Mr. Mayor is the same thing. If this show had come out around the time of Parks and Rec and The Good Place, obviously, you know, Ted Danson, but if it had come out just years earlier when people still, I think, had more hope, this would be a show that people are like, oh my gosh, what an amazing cast. And it's so funny. And it is an amazing cast. It's so funny. But the thing is right now I live in LA. It's just like not a time when we can just be like, oh, what a goofy, charming mayor of LA. Oh my gosh, what a knucklehead. What a cutie pie that we all can laugh at. You know, it's like that girl with the daddy hat. They're trying to personify the mayor of LA that way. And it just doesn't work when we're all very angry at the mayor of LA right now. I don't know who the show is for, who is like, oh, I just want to be charmed by this political office when we're also desperately annoyed and upset. So, hey, you know, it's a shame because it really is funny and it's a talented cast, but I don't know. There needs to be something that makes it less based in reality, something that makes it more surreal for me to disconnect it from the fact that, you know, they're literally talking about real issues right now. So it's a weird tone to strike. And wow, that's the watch list. That is all the TV that I watched. Wow. And you know, if you want to get more detailed info on all that, even more insights into TV I watched, because you know there's more TV that I watched, you can subscribe again to the newsletter or the Patreon, where I have detailed things of things I'm watching, where people are making me watch things that I'm reviewing. On that list, we have Dark and the Wildlings. The Wilds? It's the Wilds. We have Dark in the Wilds. That's what some people have asked me to watch. So I'll be doing some bi-weekly recaps. I try to do every three episodes and then write something for the people. So hey, if there's something you want to make me watch, add it to the watch list. Just subscribe to the newsletter or the Patreon and I will do it. Up next, we have our interview with Nicki Mayard. Enjoy that. Here we go.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening. to put anything on, or can you hear me well?
You sound great to me.
All right, cool. I like it when I can do it without mics, because I have all that set up, but I just want to...
Yeah, I always feel so corny when I have, like, my mic set up thing, and I feel like then I'm a real white boy podcaster, and I'm just like, that's not the vibe here.
With me, it's just annoying for me, because I just get to a point where I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, you know, like, the audio stuff happens, and I'm like, I'm going to be real with y'all, like, I really can't. Like, I'm like, it's not working, so what are we going
to
do?
Yeah, they'll be like, oh, you got to have this app and this app open, and then get this, and then I'll mix it, and I'm just like...
Can you also, like, record your own audio?
Yeah, and then send that over, and I'm just like, no, you can just be on your phone, and I'll work this out, don't worry. But thank you so much for doing the show. Today we have Nikki Mayard on the show. Writer on Laser Wolf, hilarious, just a writer on so many things. I mean, I know you were tweeting earlier, you're getting back into kind of writing for yourself. You write literature for TV. I'm just such a fan. And I'm so happy to have you here, especially I think after this hectic, insane week, your tweets have really been a source of comfort for me, because I'm like, thank you.
That's wonderful, because I told myself that I was going to stay off of Twitter this week. It's 2 years since one of my best friends died this week. So I was like, oh, I'm total mental health, getting out of here, self-care. And then I was like, this is where I go to feel better when things that are out of my control are happening, because I'm able to talk to other people and at least commiserate, you know?
Yeah, so it's a way to
Twitter all week. And I was like, nah, it's probably not the week for that. Like, maybe next week to decompress.
It's a way to collectively process. Yeah. Even that girl who this morning had that Gail interview, just immediately seeing your reaction of just, why are we even letting her on TV? I was like, thank you.
Like, why are we watching this?
But at the same time, I'm like, really? She went with a daddy hat? A daddy hat.
So I described it. It was very Kendall Jenner AOC cosplay.
Yeah.
Like, very, I'm in LA. Think of me as a young LA girl, but also like, think of me as a person of color, and also think of me as pretty, so that you feel automatically you don't know what this 14-year-old black boy looks like, but you know that I'm very pretty.
Yeah, so that I'm very pretty and so nice, and I'm just a girl, and he's a guy.
Whatever, you know, and like, this lady's like, oh my God, this lady's getting in my face. And I was like, this lawyer didn't properly brief you. And that's unfortunate, because it seems that you are a little out of it.
She was just like, I got this. Don't worry. I saw some PR classes on TikTok and I know what I'm doing here.
This is like 100% a Laser Wolf scenario where he's just like, I'm coming in. I got this.
Yes.
I don't like doing interviews, but I'm going to do it and then I'm going to go.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you're not a cartoon, you're a human.
Yeah, there's this one line in the first season, I think Vince does it. He has to pay for something, and he's like, paying for something? Ew, I'm not doing that. The deadpan delivery, that was the same way that she was just like, Gail, enough.
Enough.
Where it's just like, where is the confidence coming from?
As if she wasn't saying it, she's like, just to make sure you understand what I'm saying, enough.
Enough. And it's like with a tone of, do you know who I am, Gail? Just
so like, imagine being the craziest interview Gail has ever done is R. Kelly. And now you're like right there.
You're right up there. You're right up there with R. Kelly's like, y'all are killing me. Like that's
it. You know, it's like there's this guy and now there's you.
And now there's you. Good job. But yeah, with all of this going on, I've been rewatching Laser Wolf for the interview, and it's an amazing show. I feel like it gets this reputation of a show you have to watch when you're absolutely stoned. And it is an amazing stoner show. And I think it deserves credit as being an amazing black stoner show, which is good. But I know you're doing a dry January, right?
Mm-hmm. I am. And the funny thing is that I always laugh about Laser Wolf so much, because obviously the writer's room, most of us smoke weed, but I'm probably the biggest stoner. But Laser Wolf, Vince doesn't smoke weed. Like, Vince is completely sober. Wow. So it's really funny to make a show that it is stoner. That's Adult Swim too, I think.
But yeah,
you get that. It's that gamer kind of end of the night, you're chilling, kind of laugh to yourself absurdity that works on the channel. And it's just so funny to have a stoner show with a star that has he doesn't smoke weed or anything at all. So I think we try to give people the idea that it's a stoner show, just to give them the idea you're really supposed to watch this to relax. You also are allowed to miss half the jokes. We want you to watch it over and over and over again. It's only 11 minutes. You know what I mean? So replay value is really what we're shooting for. And so that idea of just being like, come to this when you're ready to settle down, get your brain into like a little weird world. And just, if you don't smoke, then feel like, okay, I'm a little euphoric. I'm a little, outside of reality and I'm laughing until my chest hurts kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah. So I feel like the first time I watched it, yes, I was absolutely stoned and it was amazing. I was just like, this is so good. It's so funny. I just love the whole vibe of it. And then rewatching it, still high, but less high because, you know, not as high, actually able to get into the details and be like, oh my God, that joke is hilarious. Like yeah. The actual concepts are so beyond the stoner comedy. And I know there's that show, The Midnight Train and stuff, and Rick and Morty, where people are like, oh, this is just kind of silly and kind of funny. But then you watch it and you're like, no, this actually gets into really heavy themes.
Yeah.
And it's so good. Your episode that you co-wrote on in the first season, Where Are You From? I love that one, where it's this weird semi-documentary of warring lemonade factions.
Yeah. So that episode means a lot to me. It's not my ultimate favorite episode, but it's like my second favorite. Because when I walked in, it was like an idea that we brought up in the writer's room that really, it was Henry's idea, honestly. Henry, when we came into the writer's room, one of the things that he really set up for us was the understanding that everyone in Stromberg is Black, except for the animals, which you should think of as Black anyway, you know, but everyone in Stromberg is Black. So he was like, I just want to make that very clear that you don't have to explain Blackness because nothing else exists in this world. So that kind of took for us as Black writers, like, okay, cool. I can just focus on specific cultural references, getting into stuff that's really funny without having to provide some sort of levity against whiteness or against, oh, you know, blah, 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 like this.
There's so many of those moments that are beautiful. There's one joke in that episode where it's like, he's mean, like Lawrence Fishburne playing Ike Turner mean. Yeah. And it's like, so just, I don't have to, you don't, like, yes.
But you like, get
instantly,
it.
Yeah, you get it. And I feel like that's one of those lines where working with like a white editor or someone would be like, could you describe this a bit more? Like what, if someone who hasn't seen that movie,
right.
How would they, and there's none of that here. And I just love that about the show.
A puff of comb cereal, you see it and you either get it and you don't have to be Black to get it. That's the great thing too about it, right? You make a Black show and you center it in Blackness, which means that the audience either gets it or they don't. They don't have to feel like, oh, this joke was for me, but that joke wasn't. It's like, no, all the jokes are for you. You either get it or you don't.
You don't.
And you either get it because you are Black and you have these cultural references or you know these cultural references. We're not here to judge you. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing in there that we're like, you shouldn't know about that.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like some sort of test of like...
Yeah, it's not. We really weren't trying to be Henry, really. And I think that's what made it so wonderful for me too on the show. So often when you write Black things, you're like, how do I contextualize it? Da, 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 da. And it's like, we are the context. That's enough. And there's, to me, in America, Black culture is American culture. So everyone always wants it to be specific when we're using it, but they're happy to appropriate, take, look at the language of advertising now. It's the language of Black Twitter. So it's like, if our stuff is so accessible to you to sell, then it should also be accessible to you to entertain and enjoy. And we shouldn't have to contextualize it. And the premise of that whole episode was, Henry said, if everyone in the world is Black, what is the Civil War about? And we all started shouting things out. Resources, obviously. I was like food. I was like anything. We love to argue about anything. And so I think for me, I really jumped on that episode. There was like a little bit of a tension about whether we should do that episode. And then Henry really fought for it. And I just raised my hand and I was like, I have to do this. Because I was like, I love Ken Burns. One of the first documentaries I ever watched of his was The Civil War, which was, I didn't even know why my young self was watching that so so intensely. And I was like, there's just, to me, that idea that we can rewrite history in our own context and just have it be fun and playful and not try to, as much as I love the Boondocks, like, we're not here to teach you anything. We're not here to get a message across to you other than just, here's what it is and here's what's going
on. Here's our idea of this.
Right. So the idea came from thinking about grits. You know how we fight about putting sugar in grits or not?
Yeah, of course.
Sweet versus unsweet.
Savory.
And I was like, it's always about taste. Sweet and savory to me made the most sense. And then lemonade, we just kind of ran with. It just ended up being, I don't even remember how we got to lemonade, but it was just being able to take something so simple and make so much fun out of it and touch on so many things. The episode, I'm always surprised that people really love that episode because I always feel like it's my sense of humor where it's like, I said something super, super nerdy and everyone's like, I kind of get it, Nick, but like, come on.
It's so good. And that was one of the episodes where I was like, how can you say this is just a stoner weed show when it's getting into themes like this? And just to backtrack a bit, you said this was your second favorite episode. What's your first?
My favorite episode is the one this season where Jamantha interviews Lamont Brickwater.
Okay, yeah.
That one is my favorite just because the visual gags in it. When they sent me the episode, I was really crying. And the visual gags in it and the idea, just the back and forth of the two. Like, there's nothing in that episode that is, it's just media. You know, it's just like idea of media. And so that's my favorite.
That one, I love that one. I just thought it was perfect. I've never seen a show perfectly just skewer this type of relationship, I guess. Or I don't know. I was just like, yes, this is what it is like.
That, Civil War, and Bill Figa are my three favorite episodes.
I have to say, though, one of my favorite lines in the second season is in the episode you wrote, The End is High, which they're all in heaven and stuff. And at one point, someone says, being stuck in God's house is my idea of hell.
Yeah.
And just there's something about being in heaven, being like, I'm just stuck in God's house. That is my favorite thing that I've ever heard.
Think about it, you know?
Like, damn, I'm really just stuck in God's house right now. I'm just
right. And it's like, the funny part is he's punishing himself by punishing them. And that's so funny. And I think for me, when I first heard about the show, when I sat down with Henry and watched the pilot, and I saw that God was a character. And in the original pilot, Lazarus says very clearly that he doesn't like God, and it's his life mission to prove that that guy is nobody. You know what I mean? It's not even this anti-religious stance. It's just literally new rappers being like, I don't know who Biggie is and I don't care. You know what I mean? And you're like, yeah, that works. Like,
yeah, like
so Godfrey is such a great character because obviously growing up Black, growing up in church, it's almost like, ooh, could I ever have made this joke? You know, there's a time in your life where you're like, I could have never made this joke. But also just showing him as that thing about we're made in his image. And it's like, nah, he's also us. If we're like him, then is he like us?
Yeah.
Too much think about the divinity too much, but being able to have him be a character that's wrathful and vengeful and also just petty in the way that he kind of is in the Bible is really funny. And having him be Black so that it's literally having Carl Winslow makes it feel like a Black dad.
And he's still
Black dad is just such an absurd and fun way to look at it and to have
And not that I think I can spoil the show or anything, but just at the end when they use Manifest Destiny and a technical eviction and he's just like, damn, how'd you get the lease for this place? And it's just
also Pirate God gambles. Like every even in the Uno episode where he's gambling over the championship belt, he gambles over the universe. The moon is his ex, so he doesn't get involved. Like the idea of God living in the world that he created, really absorbing and being a part of it rather than kind of being this thing that, because I think that's also very Black too. God for Black people feels very tangible, I think. You know what I mean? You have to believe in a lot of things you can't see when you're Black. So I think God goes beyond feeling like some sort of omnipotent person above us and more like a person that walks with you every day. I'm speaking just from growing up in religion. I just want to say I'm not telling anybody. But yeah, that's really funny for me also because I am atheist. So like, seeing God as a character, being able to do it as a cartoon and not having to worry about dipping into anything that makes anyone feel weird about
Or uncomfortable.
Imagine if this guy was like, cool and just
I love that episode when they're just like, you have no chill, you just
no chill.
From the beginning you have no chill, you kind of have a problem, bro. Like
and also like it's funny because we always talk about like our God is an Old Testament God. He's
like
not cool. He's not like turning things water into wine. He's just like I'm really mad all the time.
All the time. Please, you're wearing the wrong linens and I'm not into it. Like, exactly. That does not sound fun to me. I don't want to be stuck in his house.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Hey everyone, this is Gil Ozeri. You may know me as the guy who eats food over a garbage can, or my wife's cute little companion with the ass that won't quit. Or you may know me from Comedy Bang Bang. I play Dr. Sweetchat and Ned Bellinella, the busiest man, or Irving Sardinus. Anyway, I just wanted to say how much I'm gonna miss Scott now that he's dead. What? What do you mean he's not dead? Well, whose funeral was that? What? Who the hell is Gary? Wow, okay, well, I guess I want to wish Comedy Bang Bang a happy 50th 15th anniversary. Wow, I always have the best time on CBB. It is so much fun to do, and Scott makes me feel warm and welcome and extra wet. So here's to another 15 years. Keep listening to Comedy Bang Bang wherever you get your podcasts.
Booba, go do it.
That's right, Booba. They should go do it.
Yes.
They should, Booba, right?
Yes.
Shouldn't they?
No.
What do you mean, no?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Booba, go do it.
Yes, Booba, go do.
Booba, go do.
That's right, Booba, go do.
One of the things I kind of was curious about, because you mentioned Reginald LaVelle Johnson, I love so much of the voice work in the show. And obviously, over the last year, there's been so much talk or just whatever about Black voice actors and people saying, oh, well, it's so hard to find Black voice actors and whatever, and it changes the tone of the show, and that's why we do this or whatever. And then I watch Laser Wolf, and it's just like, how? Wait, what? It's some of the best voice work that I've ever heard, I guess, in a show. And I think it just shows the capability of, like you said, you can have someone play God and play it off as like a dad character. I was just curious if you could kind of talk about the voice work on the show, working with...
Yeah, I think one of the things we did, if you watched in the first season, obviously we were introducing all the characters, most of the writers had voices. But when we came into the second season, Henry was like, I really want to make this an ensemble cast. Like, I really want it to. So that's how you have me playing four different characters. You have Ellington Wells playing three different characters. You have Quint playing a bunch of characters. And so what it really is wonderful, because we get to write, we know the delivery a little bit. We get to write and play with it. And knowing the voices that you have, like, we know Vince. So being able to know Vince, and even though Laser Wolf isn't Vince, but knowing how Vince can deliver Laser Wolf, I think has always been really fun. And I think the thing that really does it for us is if you have the context of everyone in this show is Black and you are writing in tonally, culturally, just referentially Black, to bring someone who's not Black in to do a voice, it's not to say that they couldn't, but I'm asking a lot out of you already. You know what I mean? I'm almost asking you immediately to put on a performance because I am asking you to play this Black person. Whereas I think in other shows where there are Black and white characters, people tend to tell themselves, like, well, it's who can play the character best, right? Because there are all sorts of different tones and voices here, so we just want it to be diverse or whatever. But when you're writing something that's so referential, so Black and steeped in that, and not really giving up any part of that, it would be hard for me to imagine us having a lot of or any white voice. White actors, people, yeah. You know, it's funny because people think Stupid Horse is white, and I'm like, why? I'm like, nothing about Stupid Horse is white.
Yeah,
as anti-Blackness makes you think of Stupid Horse as, oh, a silly. But I'm like, J.D. Witherspoon is Black voice acting. You know what I mean? This is the son of John Witherspoon, but also J.D. Witherspoon's voice. He's incredible. And I'm like, there's no one white on our show. And I can't imagine as a voice actor coming in. And, you know, like, Cree is our voice director. And it's so great being there with her, because the references she gives you, she's like, you know, give it to me like you're doing this. Give it to me like you're doing that. And then you build the rapport of it. And you can even watch when we're recording it. The white people in the studio who come in, who are watching it, are like laughing with us, and they're laughing, but you can tell they're like, I don't want to laugh too hard.
Yeah. You know? Like, well, you know, they're attacking. Like, no, like, what am I laughing at? Am I doing it right? Am I getting it the right thing?
To me, it makes it easier to laugh at everything because you know that it comes all from the same source. It all comes from the same thing. It all has the same intention.
You mentioned Cree. What is it like working with her?
Insane. It's like the best thing of my whole freaking life. I'm just such a fan of hers, and I'm a fan of her voice acting. I follow her voice everywhere, and I think it's so wonderful. I love raspy voices. And to walk in and see her, and she walked in, and she's like, this show is so funny, man. And she's like a stoner. She's so chill. She's like our native hippie auntie. She's just so down to earth and cool, but so professional. You see the years and years of experience that she has, the decades of experience that she has when she's telling you how to re-deliver a line. You know, you're recording this and animation is not like live action. I'm not sitting in the room with Vince recording it. I might be sitting in the booth, you know, listening to him, but you're delivering your lines by yourself. Sometimes there's a cue in, but really you're just talking into a mic and trying to feel the scene out for yourself. And Cree is so incredible at describing what kind of voice she wants from you, listening to your first take and saying, like, I need an inflection right here. And she's like, okay, you sound a little mad and I want you to sound like you about to punch somebody. And she gives it to you. And for me, someone who's never voice acted before, like, people like my voice. I'm very good at speaking, but I've never voice acted before. It's still acting, but it's still very much acting. And having someone who really knows how to deliver, also knowing how to tell you how to deliver. You know, it's like they say, smart people who can't teach, you know what I mean? And smart and can teach. And I think that to me, if I never did anything again in this realm, that would still be the coolest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. I feel like that really is seen in sort of all of the second season episodes. Mm-hmm. Everything you said about it being more of an ensemble comedy, I really felt that. And I think in the voice work, I don't know, there was something to it that really kind of bounced out. And I think that points to it.
Our first season, Carl Jones did it, and he's great. He's wonderful. Obviously, also just this tons of resume as well. But like Cree, really, there was just something about the way she really was with us in the booth. You know what I mean? Like she knew everything. She's like, sometimes you come in and you're recording. I record almost all my episodes in one day. So like a lot of times it's like, we're moving to this. Okay, page 35 and episode 204. And I'm like, what's happening here again? She's like, hey, baby girl, this is the moment when you're done. And she just walks you right in it. And she just strips away that insecurity for you and just lets you have a lot of fun. When I do the club owner and I have to eat an apple on the mic, it's the weirdest thing to like try to eat an apple when you're not really eating.
Yeah.
And she's like, give me a little more crunch. Give me a little more. Like, you know, she's so hands-on. And when I watch this season, I'm like, yeah, you feel us melding. Yeah. You know, the second season, the whole point of it is to like make you guys understand and love the characters more and kind of give you a bigger background on who we are and why we're so odd. And I felt like the second season's made us less odd, which in a good way, you know, like it made us make more sense.
Yeah.
She's part of that.
There's kind of more personal warmth maybe in the voices in the second season. In your episode, the fourth one, there's a robot, or not robot, like a computer internet character. When she comes on, she like introduced it and she kind of coughs.
Yeah.
And just that little pause made me laugh because I was just like, why would a robot But it just was one of those small things where I was like, I wonder if that was just an accident in the booth and somebody was like, no.
No, that was me.
It's just and it was like those little touches where I was like, this is so good. Just
And that's Cree. She'll hear you deliver it and then she'll be like, I like that. With me, very often she would be like, because you do the line three times. And she'd be like, I really like on the second one how you did that. I didn't think about, why don't you do this? And then, you know, when you have someone that experience, you're improvising in the booth too, which is really, really fun. Yeah. We'll record something and she might say like, yeah, let me get that cough in there or whatever. Or even that character, when she was describing to me the voice that she wanted, Jamantha's my voice. Jamantha's kind of raw, my voice, in the way that Blazer Wolf is very much QB's voice. And so she was just like, can you sound like Kate Blanchett from The Lord of the Rings? She's very ethereal oracle. And I was like, oh yeah. Like, you know, and we're like, tinkered it in the booth. And then the cough thing, she was like, yeah, make it feel like a human is in there, you know, like, it's a computer, but make it feel like a human is sitting in there. And I think just having that little, it just makes all the difference when you can really feel yourself like grow. You have time to like kind of grow into the character and kind of get it and tinker with it and play with it. That's the fun of animation too. They can't see your face. So it's drawn after you say it.
Yeah.
So if you say it right, that gives the animators so much more to play with. Exactly.
Yeah, that's so cool. Also in that episode, I love the Blue Bloods joke.
Yeah, I mean, Blue Bloods is our running joke. It's in season one, it's in season two. I think we were very happy in season two to show you that it's a vampire cop show because we were we stopped in the room and we were like, but what is Blue Bloods? Like, you know, and the funny thing about it is all the jokes are really earnest and really cute. It's just a CBS joke about God being old. Like, that's all it is, you know? It's so fun, and we riff on it, and it's so cool to watch him and Wallace watching it, but it's really just, like, a riff on old people watching Blue Bloods and,
Yeah, oh my God, my mother loves that show. Because I feel like I'm one of the few people who's heard of it just because my mom talks about it. And
Fun
of it, I'm like...
my parents' favorite show.
I lived in Chicago, and they shoot it there, and they had a media party one year, and somehow I ended up on the invite list. And they had these Blue Blood cocktails. And one of the last bad memories I have of getting drunk is at a Blue Bloods party on Blue Blood cocktails that were just Blue Raspberry Red Bull with blue vodka. So yeah, that really just brought that memory back for me.
I was like, I can taste that memory for you.
Yes, that's Vista. I wanted to bring that to my listeners.
I'm like, we're all sitting here like, what's the Martin sound? Like, you know, like that. Like,
yeah, and I just remember that. And then they had pictures of Tom Selleck or whatever is in the show everywhere. And I just remember being like, what is life right now? It's just Blue Bloods. Everything is Blue Bloods.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like all the characters, we try to give them levity quirks. Jamantha don't pay her debts. You know what I'm saying? Like Blazer Wolf is a crazy capitalist. Cannon Wolf is an opportunistic scammer, which we love. And scamming is our favorite. We're always talking about scamming in the writing. We're just like, scam, scam, scam it all. And so being able to give the characters just anything, even the littlest things that Laser Wolf is such a fun character, but he could really be so flat because he doesn't like anything. You know what I mean? People who don't like anything are such a bother. And the one thing that I'm always so in awe of when I watch Laser Wolf is how much I love how much he doesn't like things.
Yeah. And
so he like practices not liking things. It's not just apathy, it's active not liking. Yeah. You know?
And it's very firm boundaries, just like shock. It's always a very firm, funny boundary where he's just like, I will not, no, thank you.
No. My favorite thing also is that he doesn't tell people he doesn't like things. He expects them to know. And that's my favorite thing. So he's always like, you know, I don't like work. You know, I don't like working. You know what I mean? You know, I don't like food. You know, I don't like talking to people. You know, he's never in a place where he feels like he has to explain himself. He's in a place where he feels like he should be understood.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes the show so earnest and actually really sweet. He's not some ravaging monster that really ruins the day of everyone around him. Everyone is really around him because they really respect his boundaries and like the way that he moves about the world.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Laser Wolf, it has been one of the pleasures that has come into my life over the last 2 weeks during this coup. I'm so happy that I've been watching it. If you're out there, the second season just ended when you're listening to this. So the first season I know is all on HBO Max. And if you have Hulu with Live or Hulu
adultswim.com, if you have like a login, or you can watch it via Hulu
Hulu, and it'll all be on HBO Max soon. It's so good. What else have you been watching to get through this coup in our last final minute?
I've been rewatching Laser Wolf. I'm not kidding. I literally rewatched the show because it's such an easy and smooth watch and listen. I've been rewatching Laser Wolf. I've been watching a lot of anime. I've just been staying out of real world stuff.
Yeah.
So Attack on Titan and like a bunch of...
I know that one. Okay, I'm not an anime person, but I do watch Attack on Titan. My friends always make fun of me. I can never remember the name, and I'm always like, oh, it's the Remember the Titans with the monsters. And they're like, that's not that show. But yeah.
I've been watching that, and then I've been watching a lot of British TV. So I'm watching Gangs of London. I'm watching the show Gomorrah from Italy. Like, I've just been very much in either very light. I've been rewatching Robot Chicken, which I really love.
Yeah.
Big Mouth, which is really great because Clutch is on it. And I just freaking love that show.
The last season of Big Mouth, that got me through December, I feel like. I was just like, thank God we have this. It just brightened up my soul.
It really did. And it was on time. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was something that people really wanted to see, something people needed to see. I think something that we haven't seen very often with Missy's whole storyline and all of that. And so... yeah, I've been kind of sticking more to cartoons and kind of just rewatching old 90s action movies and thrillers. I like seeing old New York, and I don't know, there's something about seeing the world pre-pandemic, but way before pandemic, you know, like way before.
Yeah, there's like a comfort in like a 9/11 New York show.
Exactly.
Nothing really beats it. I did that with early Sex in the City. I was just like, oh, wow, look at, look at these white ladies.
But I ended up doing Law & Order SVU from the beginning.
Yes.
It's really funny to watch that show now, feeling how I feel about police and all that stuff, but it's still very much a character development show. So watching a character you watch your whole life from the beginning, and also just seeing New York and seeing, you know, this is a show where every single episode you see a different New York. So you see the changes in New York in real time.
Yeah.
And I've really been enjoying that as well.
Yeah. And it really reflects, I mean, culture and society. They really do rip from the headlines in a way where you're like, oh my gosh, I need to go check out the real story behind that. I can't believe that actually happened. Wow.
And seeing the changes, I think what they really do, not that I'm here to hype up cop shows, but
Watch Law and Order. We are not.
Yeah. What they do is, as you watch the characters in the way that I'm watching it, you see the change in cultural beliefs. So even the way they talk about sexual assault,
yeah.
So seeing it in 1997 when they started all the way till now when we have Me Too and where we have language, watching the language change and watching Olivia Benson explain the language change, you know, it's like, that's probably what I'm getting the most out of it. It gives me a little bit of optimism about how much progression has happened.
Yeah.
Even if looking outside makes you feel like walking backwards.
The world is, we're being just tossed backwards. We're moonwalking.
It's ironic. I have to look at the past to kind of remember that as hard as this feels, we have come a long way. And I mean, literally, a laser wolf's on TV. That's
yes.
And it's as a kid, I would never imagine that, you know? So
yeah, and it's so fucking good. Nikki, hey. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
So much for having me. This was wonderful.
Oh my God, this was so much fun. I am so happy I got to talk to you about these episodes. I'm loving the show.
Well, happy to talk to everyone about Laser Wolf. I think, well, this happens afterwards, but we were doing like a clubhouse room where people could watch with us. And I think if we get a season 3, we'll probably do something like that where we can talk to
yes.
people.
Yes, I feel like getting high on Clubhouse with y'all while you talk through the episodes is the dream. That happened. Make that happen. Yes.
Well, thanks, Ashley. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Ashley
Ray. Oh, thank you to my wonderful guest, Nikki Mayer. That conversation, I have to say, uplifted me after that horrible week that we had. It was so great to just talk to someone about their show and their writing process. And gosh, that's what I love about this podcast. If you also love this podcast and you want to support what I'm doing over here, this one woman operation that is me doing my podcast, you can support me at the Patreon. There's the Substack, like I said, the newsletter. You get some really cool extra content. You get the episodes early. You get transcripts of every episode. You can make me watch things. Like I said, there's so many cool perks. If you want to subscribe, you can basically donate whatever you want. You can donate a dollar to the Patreon or just the Substack, whatever. So many options. But thank you so much. If you don't want to give me any money, at least rate and review. At least give me 5 stars. Go leave a comment. I'd appreciate that. On whatever device you're listening on or streaming thing, that would be great. Thank you so much for listening. This has been TV I Say with Ashley Ray, and we'll be back next week with another episode. The TV I Say theme song was made by Rafia Santana, and our artwork was created by Chastity Hyman. TV I Say with Ashley Ray, another episode. Another episode of TV I Say with Ashley Ray. Another episode. Another episode of TV I Say.